And good morning and welcome to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And we're here on the Republic Broadcasting Network every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And I hope everyone appreciated our guest last week. You know, talking about Jefferson was, I think, something long overdue and something needed always during the election season, being reminded of our roots and some of the basics of our American character that we share, whether Republican or Democrat. I think it's important for us to remember those roots and apply them in the politics that we like to shape around us. You know, when you think about government, at least when I do, I always try to remember that it's supposed to spring from the people, and, you know, oftentimes it doesn't. The last post was talking about, you know, the New York Times article on the Chinese currency, you know, in a one-world currency, something that everyone has seen for a long time. And again, stuff that is going to be happening with the next Congress and the successor Congresses in the next few years, something that we need to pay attention to this time. Just get involved in your local elections. Figure out who those candidates are and get behind those that represent true American values and slice up the rest of them with a good political debate. In any case, it's good to be with you this morning. I just got back from lecturing in Santa Fe. I had a great time down there, met a lot of really wonderful people, and I look forward to going back again early in the spring. You know, the opportunity to lecture around the country have come up from time to time. It gives me a chance to really meet folks and find out whether we're communicating our message in terms of the radio programs, things that we do, and it's always good to be doing that. You know, today for a call-in, I want to leave the lines open, the subjects open. We're just going to kind of talk about some of the things in the news. The call-in number today is 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443, and you're listening to Dr. Nick Begich. You know, the one of the things in our papers today here in Alaska, a big piece of news and something the rest of the country is kind of unaware of, they issued our permanent fund dividend checks. Now, that's an interesting concept and something that most of the country doesn't even know we have here. You know, Alaska generates most of its revenue from oil, from royalties on oil. We get 12.5% of what goes comes out of Prudhoe Bay, which produces about 1 million barrels of oil a day. You know, 12.5% of that goes to Alaska's treasury, and of that, a quarter of it, or about 3%, a little over 3% of that, goes into what is what's called our permanent fund. And this is a fund that allows us here in Alaska to avoid any income tax in terms of state tax. There's no state property tax, no state income tax, and no state sales tax. In Alaska, no corporate taxes until you net a little over a quarter of a million a year. In other words, it's pretty much a tax haven here. And the reason is we have developed our revenue streams for the state's economy based on the natural resources which belong to all of us in common. And we lease those resources to the oil industry. What has happened here, and this is an interesting model, because when you think about it, here's the resources of the land, the national resources, and in this case, that state portion of our resources actually paying for the operation of much of our state. And in fact, almost 85% of the budget here is derived from that single source. But what they've done is invest and put that money away, a little bit of money away, 3% a year. And what we have now in the bank is about $30 billion. That's about 10 years of our state's operating budget. Pretty amazing situation. And the interest that's earned on it, half of it goes back in the fund, and there's a little bit of a formula there, but basically half goes in and the other half is distributed once a year. And today was the golden day where $238 million dropped into bank accounts around the state. You know, the total impact to our economy is huge, and it's a big deal, and it's a big thing, and today was the day. Check out some of the websites and find out how that happened, but $1,100 per person, man, woman, and child, was distributed out of our share of our oil wealth and earnings. You know, this is something that could have been done, still can be done in lots of parts of the world, lots of parts of the country where natural resources are still being developed, and these resources, again, belong to And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And we're here on the at RBN Live on the Republic Broadcasting Network every Wednesday from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. The call-in number today is 800-313-9443, and the lines are open. 800-313-9443. Give a call and let's talk about the subjects that interest you today. And we'll cover some of the various topics we've covered in the past and kind of recap some of the things happening in the news. You know, a couple of weeks ago I talked about Chavez out of Venezuela buying everybody fuel oil here in Alaska. You know, in our villages around Alaska, you have to fly in diesel fuel, so it runs $5 to $7 a gallon. We have about a 40% unemployment rate in rural Alaska. So the dividend that came out today is really important, and you've got people like the Venezuelan president wanting to buy everybody home heating oil here, 100 gallons apiece. And, you know, four out of 228 communities that were offered that here in Alaska, four of the village councils, the tribal leaders in those areas, rejected it and actually said, no, we're not interested in it. And as a result, people from all over the country ended up filling the gap. So they ended up in the same position, maybe a better position than they were. People recognized the need and took care of it. But, you know, this dividend, this share of oil wealth, and it's all back to oil again, you know, is really an important part of our economy. You know, in rural economies, Alaska, for anyone who's ever traveled here, it's almost a third-world nation buried within a first-world country. When you think about getting off the road system here, it really dropped back 100 years in most areas. Still, many areas lack running water and decent water and sewer systems, something that very few people around the world even realize still exists in this country. But Alaska is a vast, huge place. It's the fifth of the landmass of the United States. It holds some of the greatest resource wealth in the world. In fact, it's that resource wealth that brought us into the Union back in 1959. What happened essentially was the discovery of oil in Cook Inlet, and that oil and the need for that oil was obvious, and the idea that Alaska may in fact have vast resources in oil and gas, and later was proven to be exactly the case. Beyond that, some other things happening in the news up here, up in the far Arctic, the northern regions up in the Arctic Ocean above Alaska. A lake has formed. This lake has just finally broken an inlet. The lake is forming within the ice itself as the ice melts during the summer months, and the largest lake ever formed, 38,000 square miles, about the size of Indiana. This is an indication, again, of what's happening in terms of climate. Never in recorded history have we seen this kind of formation in terms of melting in one season. And I guess the perimeters weren't finally decided. They were still expanding. At the same time, reaffirming what we've already reported on, other reports of glacial studies throughout Alaska again this year indicate an acceleration in the melting process that we're experiencing. And interestingly enough, we even had one of the papers did a poll. I mean, like a poll on climate change. It's really going to get to the bottom of it. But it was interesting because here in Alaska, by about 70-30 ratios, when you go through all the questions that were asked, people clearly see the change. And that's an important factor because the temperature changes here in the Arctic and subarctic are running several degrees warmer than, say, the averages around the world. You know, when they report, you know, climate change or climate increases of a half a degree around the world, well, that's an average. And here in Alaska, we see on the extreme end of those averages, and we're seeing it. I harvested my apples a couple weeks ago. You know, years ago when I grew up here, that was an impossibility. Another big deal in the news. You know, when you think about energy and you think about all the things that fuel Alaska and the commodities prices right now around the world, Alaska is, in fact, one of the big storehouses of the national wealth. The national lands in Alaska amount to about 70% of all the land here, and most of that contains incredible mineral resources. People who come here and understand geology and see what's here, it is just a treasury of resources, most of which are undeveloped. most of which you can't even get to unless you can fly. And if you can fly, you need a helicopter to land because there's no airports, no runways, no roads, no railroads. Very, very little has passed here in the last 100 years. You know, and that gets into this other issue, and again wrapped up in oil and gas. In the mid-'80s, we tucked up huge tracts of land in national preserves and parks and national forests and so on here in Alaska, many of which are totally inaccessible. And I was looking at this month's National Geographic when I came in from my flight last night, and there's a beautiful article on the national parks. Our national parks here in Alaska, inaccessible to anybody unless you're very rich and can afford to get out there in that helicopter. But across the country, where the roads do exist to our national parks, the roads to the parks and the systems that support Americans touring through our parks are devastated. I mean, they are in need. They have a $3 billion backlog in road repairs. And why I bring that up is, you know, the national parks are part of our national heritage. They're part of who we are as Americans. And the idea that our roads are crumbling as we're rebuilding countries like Iraq, it irritates me. I mean, it irritates me a lot. We have $3 billion in identified needs by our Park Service alone, and we're spending over $500 billion in the rebuilding and reconstruction of Iraq. Some are saying with the war, all of it total, maybe $1 trillion over the next few years, and we can't even repair the roads in our national parks. It's a disgrace and a misuse of resources from my perspective. And one of those problems, again, about what is the reason we're in the Middle East and in this conflict right now, it's not terrorism as much as it is about oil and energy policy, and we are seeing the results of it. And we said this a few months back, several months back, in fact, when oil was starting to kick up around $65, $70, we suggested that by fall things would slack off, that they'd give us all a breather, you know, in advance of the election. And sure enough, that's exactly what we're seeing. And, of course, seasonal driving has an impact. But the bottom line is, and I think people have analyzed this now, that the drop in price doesn't add up. In other words, they're dropping the price a little bit more to give us a little bit friendlier face on the oil industry. And the fact of the matter is we're going to have a lot of people freezing in the dark this winter around this country because of energy policy. Energy policy that, by the way, those initial meetings now almost 6 years ago, right after Bush Jr. was first elected, people need to remember all those meetings about all that energy policy that they still won't release to the public, and we see the results of that. You know, when here in Alaska, again, we're getting into our later fall season, we still haven't had a good solid frost. Could have let the apples go a little bit longer. But nonetheless, we're getting into our winter, and they're expecting a pretty mild winter up here and more extreme outside. But the one thing we're starting to see is very big changes. And those changes, you know, my brother had a conference up here recently. He's a mayor here in Anchorage, and he was speaking at one of the conferences on climate change, and there was a letter to the editor that said, you know, the mayor should get out of it. There's nothing we can do about it. And the reality is that writer was correct. You know, there really isn't a lot we can do about it. If you want to blame human beings for it, you have to really look at what's contributing the most in greenhouse gases. And by many, many, many times, it's natural occurrence. You know, things that drop and push these materials into the upper atmosphere, the various greenhouse gases, are beyond man's interference. And quite frankly, even if we stopped everything, I mean, if we shut down every automobile on the planet and every smokestack on the planet, nothing will change in the next 100 years. And the fact about of that is we really have to start thinking about the impact of change. And this is where the leadership has failed us. You know, we're still asphyxiating on arguing about the problem. And this has been going on now for 15 years at least when the alarm bells first started to ring. And the fact of the matter is the alarm bells can ring, but if we're all still sitting in the movie theater when the fire happens, you know, we know the result of that. And the reality is we need to move our mindset, change our worldview, change the way we see this from an argument over the cause to a debate over how do we develop national policy that will bring us food production security in the future. And provide security to all of those folks around the country that rely on agriculture for their living. And as well, all of us who have to pay for the price of agriculture. And when things get disrupted and commodity prices start to increase, the pressure on that is going to be enormous. When you think about emerging economies where there's more people to buy grain, there's more people to buy corn, there's more people to buy what is produced in the United States and around the world, the demand goes up. Climate change creates a supply that goes down, and we all know what the impact of that is it ends up inflationary in food commodities, and we're already starting to see a little bit of inflation. It's tempering a few things in the economy, but again, we're right before the election. Wait until it's over, and you're going to see the impacts of that. Housing is in trouble. We've talked about that a little bit. The idea that China's holding so much debt over our head, along with a lot of other countries, including the Middle East, is creating huge, huge potential problems for us. And as the last host said, you know, looking at an international currency as the solution is part of that. The problem is we lose even another big slice of our national sovereignty when we give up our currency. In fact, I think it's been said that the bankers have always believed, you know, just let me control the money. You can have the government. You can have whatever kind you want. Just let me control the money flow, and that's exactly what we've seen happen. And as a result, in this country, you know, the Treasury is paying for its own printing. You know, the world is changing. We've got a lot to cover today. I guess we're headed into break, and we'll be right back. Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And my website is earthpulse.com, E-A-R-T-H-P-U-L-S-E, earthpulse.com. And there's also a link onto the bio section in rbnlive.com. And this program is, the research is provided by the Lay Institute on Technology, Inc., which is a Texas nonprofit that supports the kind of research we do and actually the education of the public on the impacts of technology. Take a look at the website at layinstitute.org. And for today's show, to call in, the number is 800-313-9443, and we're talking a little bit about some of the impacts and issues of the day. You know, we're again, talking about climate change and the impact of this, you know, on all of us. You know, we're going to see disruptions. We're already seeing some of it. In agricultural areas, you know, we're running right before the election. There's certainly a lot of panic in Washington, D.C. these days. Good grief. You know, it's one scandal after another. And there's a scandal brewing here in Alaska that it's not getting hardly any visibility nationally. And I think it's a shame because the issue that's being focused on here is corruption of the oil industry and how it's effectively bought and controlled the Alaska State Legislature. The governor, who was a incumbent governor, just got wasted in his primary. I mean, this guy is the joke in the newspaper the other day was he has an 82% negative rating. I mean, this is like unheard of. An 82% negative rating, and it's primarily over oil and oil corruption that he has that negative rating. And here it is, 82%. Now, he hasn't been indicted for anything, okay? He hasn't been arrested yet. And when you compare that to the gentleman in Ohio who has been indicted, or the governor of Kentucky who's been indicted, and the one in Ohio actually got a conviction. It may actually have a better rating than our governor does. And it's over oil and gas. You know, oil and gas issues really do impact the whole country. You know, they raided 20 legislative offices here in Alaska. These are from the president of the state senate, which is Ben Stevens, the son of Ted Stevens, who's gotten a lot of notoriety around the country for his bridges to nowhere and for referring to the internet as a bunch of tubes and pipes. This is a gentleman that's on the Senate Intelligence Committee. But here in Alaska, they raided all these guys' offices, homes, and businesses to dig out information on primarily oil and gas, although there's quite a bit now beginning to surface about corruption within the fisheries industry, something that Senator Stevens Sr. in Congress, in the U.S. Senate, has provided huge amounts of money for the industry here. Not that the industry doesn't need it. In fact, it does. It's the biggest single fishery left in the world and a major national resource. But the fact is, his son keeps getting these chunks of money. I don't want to say payoff, but it certainly smells that way. And I guess the FBI thought it smelled that way enough to kick his doors in and go dig out the documents. They're not saying much, but this has been going on now for a couple of months and been percolating here, and we're expecting to see either indictments or dismissals or public statements in any case, but the ball is definitely in play, and it's kind of the aftermath. And one thing I've got to say, you know, this administration has put more money into that area of the FBI. They've, like, doubled its size in the last few years. The investigative unit of the FBI in Washington, D.C., that deals with political corruption, whether local, state, or other regional types of political corruption. And I'm glad to see it, quite frankly. It's long overdue. I'm surprised under this administration to see it at all. And I'm really surprised to see the people that are getting targeted over oil and gas. And it gives me a little bit of hope. I mean, for goodness sake, I mean, this administration beating up someone over being on the oil industry side of an oil and gas issue, I think is pretty remarkable. And an indication that maybe, just maybe, there's a little bit of a remnant left there in Washington, D.C. to watch out for the rest of us. You know, there's been a lot of fear and panic pumped into the public over a lot of issues, and they continue to do that to manipulate us into running like a herd of lemmings off the edge of a cliff. You know, panic isn't the answer. In fact, it's the opposite that is the answer. Clear thinking, good thinking based upon strong opinion in public policy is what will change this country and its character. Fueling the flames and the fire of those flames with fear is absolutely fundamentally wrong, and that's what we've had way, way too much of. You know, before the election, everybody's saying, hey, it's October, get ready for the surprise. Something's going to happen to shift the balance back the other way. I hope that's not true. I hope that we don't see some synthesized event occur to get us all again in the herd mentality. Let's stay the course. Let's use our heads, and let's be logical this year and make sure that at least we make an effort, particularly in those local and state elections. You know, when we started this show back in May, the main issues were to be technology, and we deviated from that from time to time, and I appreciate people's indulgence with that. Last week, we got quite a few callers on the Jefferson program talking about Thomas Jefferson, and then we missed some of those callers at the end. They're welcome to call back in if they still want to relate their comments and concerns or their ideas about some of the things, some of the ideas that we were kicking around last week. The 800 number is 800-313-9443, and you're listening to Dr. Nick Begich, Changing the Way We See the World. And we're headed in for a break. We'll be right back. With Dr. Nick Begich, and we've been talking a little bit about some of the things of issues of the day, primarily surrounding energy issues. And we have Woody in Pennsylvania hanging on. And Woody, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here, Nick. Can you hear me?
Hey, what? I can hear you perfectly. Good morning. How are you?
Fine. About a month ago or so, you did a program on health. I think it was your own company, I believe.
Right, we had I believe it was Richard Allen Miller we had on, and we were talking about cordyceps.
Okay, well, I ordered some stuff from you, Eighth Element.
Yes.
You had another product that you advertised at the same time, and they were supposed to have you or somebody call me back to let me know what the other product was. Could you explain it to me?
Sure, it's First Element, and it's the silica hydride, and essentially It's a product that essentially alkalizes the body. When you take it, your body will shift from being acidic to very slightly alkaline over a period of time. The other aspect of it is adds energy into your system. Usually acts as a little bit of a detoxifier. Generally speaking, when you detoxify the body, you get a little bit sluggish. With this particular product, it doesn't happen. It actually adds energy into the system, actually increasing sort of a focus and alertness is the best way to describe it. It's not like a coffee awake. You know, that's kind of like a jittery thing. This is a real focus, and it's based on available energy within the body and this shifting over from an acidic to a more alkaline state. Together, they work quite well. You know, the cordyceps, which was the topic we were really talking about, is a mushroom that was that grows at 12,000 to 18,000 feet. As a result, it has a very unusual characteristic in terms of how it affects the oxygen uptake. When you take it in to your body, it actually increases your ability to absorb oxygen by about 40%. And this is very critical for all aspects of health and endurance as well. A lot of studies on the cordyceps, so we're able to say a lot more about it. First elements, we just don't have that many independent studies, and because of FDA regulations, we need to be very careful about what we say about those products and their characteristics. But cordyceps, a lot of good information on them. Together, they're products that I take every day. One each every day is what I take, and it certainly does the job for me.
Well, I bought your ones for, I'm supposed to be on oxygen. And
uh-huh.
That's the reason I was real interested in your first one.
Yeah.
But I've also heard that the stuff that you're saying, it changes the body to alkaline, that if you are in that condition, you can't actually get sick.
That's right. An alkaline system is generally a much healthier system. You know, when you go around the country, and if you measure the pH in most water coming out of your tap, it's slightly acidic in most of the country. Here in Alaska, it actually is just over the line. It's slightly alkaline, which is the ideal state. At the same time, when you measure water for its ORP, oxygen reduction potential, in most cases, you get a positive charge. It actually acts as a little bit of a toxin because of the materials that are within most drinking water. Here out of the tap, we have a negative 33 microvolts, which indicate that the water itself actually is almost an antioxidant. So we, you know, the water quality does matter in terms of pH. So much of our diets shove us into acidic a pH, and you can tell the difference. I'll tell you, when little babies are born, and you know how most of the time I would say how sweet they smell. And it's their bodies. If you were to measure their pH, you'd find that they were slightly alkaline, and they have a sweet smell to them. As we age, you know, you've heard of the sour old men. Well, that's why. As we get more and more increasingly acidic, men lose their hair. Now we're seeing a lot of women with the same problem, and that's based on acidity in the body. You also see aging more rapidly and susceptible to disease. That is absolutely correct. An alkaline system tends to be one that's much, much healthier.
Well, this will actually help to change your body to that condition then?
Yeah, if you get pH paper at the drugstore, which you can just ask them for measuring pH, they have the litmus paper, and they'll get it for you. And you can actually check it. You know, you can look at your saliva, your urine, or your blood over, say, a week's period, taking it as directed and checking with your physician, make sure you have no conflict with anything else you're doing. But you should see that, and I think it's an important aspect of health to start to look at the underlying components of the body, and this is something you can measure yourself, and you can actually look at the results.
Okay, I'm going to try that. And one other thing, too, when he was on there, he said that you could actually take more than, you know, what was recommended.
Right. What we found is people with chronic disorders, and again, look at this is for the cordyceps, the eighth element. Which is what we call it on our website, eighth
right.
element. And you can take a look at that. And people with chronic disorders, they've been taking as many as 3 and 4 capsules a day, which is about 2 grams of the material. And it's a hybridized material, much more potent than what is produced naturally. The other thing about this is it's all produced in the United States in U.S. Controlled lab conditions that are in FDA-approved lab environments. So these are U.S.-made products, which we're really proud of, and we're competing actually against Chinese equivalents, although they're not hybridized and quality seems to be a big problem from China. You know, that's sort of a sidebar, but, you know, the Chinese, right after we started marketing this, within 24 hours we got emails from Chinese companies trying to give us, and they did, in fact, quote us much, much lower prices for non-hybridized material. And we responded, you know, no, we're not interested. And after the third inquiry by the same people, we finally said, look, we're not doing business in China. You know, that's it. It has nothing to do with you personally. We just don't want to do business in China and fuel the problem that we're as concerned about as everyone else. But that's, I think, the summation of it. It's a good, you know, we've had good reports on it. We've never had any come back to us yet. It's, you know, it's early in our marketing of these things, but we're pretty proud of them, and we expect that we'll hear good reports from all those who are using it.
Well, I've had no problem, that's for sure. I haven't really noticed a difference, but it's definitely been no problem.
All right. Well, keep using it. Take a look at your endurance. If you're doing things that you would normally not do to stress your system, that's where you start to see it, because having that available oxygen in your system, the ability to utilize more oxygen in your body, you'll see it. Runners particularly notice it. People who are used to pushing themselves to their limit notice it within a few days because that limit is extended by their ability to absorb and retain oxygen. Also, for mental processes, there's quite a bit on the eighth elements, the cordyceps that underlie it. And you can see that actually. You can see a lot of that data on our website at earthpulse.com.
Well, I thank you, and I will be getting a hold of you to get some of the what is it, number one?
We call it first elements. Potentially effective. The effect is on hydrogen. The other affects oxygen, hydrogen being the first element in the periodic table, oxygen being the eighth, and that's why we chose those names. Woody, I appreciate the call, and we have Jeff hanging in Massachusetts.
You.
Thanks, Woody. Take care.
Yes,
Jeff, are you
doing?
Still hanging in there with us?
Yes, I'm here. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm doing good. I'm sorry we didn't get to you last week. I know you were waiting on the line, and we just flat ran out of time. I had about three callers backed up, but today's another day. What's on your mind?
Oh, yes. As far as, you know, health is concerned, I'm thinking to myself, if we should ever get hit with a nuclear device, I mean, right now we're using depleted uranium in Iraq and other places. I mean, that will hit America because of the trade winds and
right.
Stuff like that. I'm thinking to myself, if we should ever get hit with a nuclear device, whether it's from our own government or whether it's from SPETNAS or some other element, this country is going to suffer so much because of the radioactivity. And I could be wrong, but there is very few ways to get radiation out of the system, and we won't have the technology to be able to do so if our infrastructure is destroyed. What's your take on that?
You're right on. And, Jeff, what you said about the dust flows, this is a really important issue that is not really brought out in the mainstream media, but there is was a doctoral dissertation that later became a book. It's called The Secret Lies of Dust.
Yes.
And it talks about the airflow coming off of the Sahara in North Africa and how that airflow in mass has delivered over millions of years a lot of the aluminum content in the soils in the southeastern United States, because it comes over and it literally dissipates in a very fine colloidal form. And colloidals being very, very, very small particles that can easily be blown and float in the atmosphere. And when you're using depleted uranium in Iraq and it's getting caught up in these air flows, you're bringing that material right into the southeastern United States eventually, and it will have an impact. And when you look at it from the standpoint of if we see a nuclear exchange in the Middle East, it's not going to stay there. It's going to literally blow around the planet, and it's going to be covering major portions of the United States, and you're not going to hear about it. I mean, it's the kind of thing that until it's a real panic party, they're not going to tell you. But the fact of the matter is, this is a way in which the air flows circulate this material. Right now, coming out of Southeast Asia and China in particular, are huge, huge amounts of pollutants and industrial waste, heavy metals and various things are quite poisonous. And in colloidal form, in very small particulate material, is even much more dangerous because the body can more readily assimilate, can absorb these very fine particles. They actually penetrate the cell membrane, if they're fine enough, and get right into our bodies in a way that is quite destructive. And it's not so much the quantity as the quality of the particle size that really matters. You know, in fact, that's one of the things we used in the last call that was asking about first elements. The silica we use in first elements is 10 nanometers in diameter. That is 10 billionths of a meter. Very, very, very small. And the reason it is because it will penetrate the cell membrane and get to the parts of the body that we want it to get to. But when you have pollutants coming in, either deliberately or accidentally, in this form because of no environmental controls or because of a major war conflict where we're dumping the material into the battlefield, and every time the dust blows in Iraq, our servicemen and women are getting massive dosages of it. At the same time, we're cutting veterans' benefits. We're not looking into the issue, and this is going to have a major, major impact on every one of these men and women. And it's up to the rest of us to insist that this Congress fund veterans' benefits, regardless about what we feel about this war. These are our people, these are our sons and daughters, and we need to take care of them. And we're not doing it, we're not even acknowledging the problem.
No, you are absolutely right. And let me add insult to injury. I bet you the elite and the people who are in on the scam, they have the cure, and they're curing themselves right now with technology that we don't even know about, because they know they're going to get polluted with the same stuff. And there's a book out called America Sold Out, written by Ray Hope and Al Cuppett, where the pages in the book are all emails written by various people like Pam Shuford and people like that. And one of the emails, it was talking about foreign tanks in this country, U.N. tanks, and they have filters that will filter out the radiation. In other words, they will nuke our cities, but they got the filters. Foreign troops will be doing the dirty work and will be glad to shoot Americans in the head wearing radiation suits.
Well, you know, this whole thing with the problems that we're seeing and their manifestation around the world certainly is heading us in a very wrong direction. You know, and again, I don't want people to be panicked. We want the opposite. We want cool heads and clear thinking. You know, we're in for some rough times coming up. You know, once this election is over with, Bush is on the two-year count. We're going to see a lot more craziness coming out of this administration. We're also going to see a lot more corruption stories. And as those rise, you're going to see the panic party in Washington increase. Jeff, I thank you for the call. I want to give callers a chance to ring in today again at 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. And a reminder also, you know, this station, this network needs to be supported. RBN Live is important to getting the word out. We've had fund drives going on the last few weeks, and it's important. Please do support the RBN. Give a call to the station after the program and definitely get involved in that. Let me give you the phone number for doing that. Get hold of the station, RBN Live. Contribute to this network and make sure that it stays on the air. It's 800-724-2719. I'm going to give that to you again. It's 800-724-2719. Support Republic Broadcasting Network to let us do this work and continue to bring these programs to you. You know, all of those funds go into the running of the station, the paying of the staff, those of us that host programs, we don't charge a fee. You know, I don't receive a salary from RBN. I do this every week to get these issues out. They give me the airtime, and I give them, hopefully, content that's meaningful. If it's meaningful to you, support this network and do something good for yourself and your fellow men and women around the country by helping get the word out on these very, very important issues. Again, for today, to get on the radio station and then have a chat with us on the network, give us a call at 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. You know, going back to, you know, sort of looking at the overview of some of this, again, complex situation. You know, we're starting to hear the rumblings of the call for a one-world currency. This is a dangerous place to be. The opposite needs to be happening. We need to ensure and usher the sovereignty of nations, including our own, We need to recognize the right and sovereignty of free peoples around the world, whether we agree necessarily with their form of government. If they're not trampling on our front door, maybe we ought to let them alone and have their own form of self-determination. A lot of noise about Chavez recently rattling his cage. You know, he's just the dictator we got, and he's not the dictator we want. Because in this country, in our history, we've certainly put in a lot of dictators to oppress a lot of people, and it's time for that to change. It's time for Americans to speak out, not just for our own sovereignty, but the sovereignty of nations. It's something we've lost sight of, the right to be left alone. You know, I was reminded of that in this latest trip to the Southwest, where I was visiting with a friend I've known for 32 years. And my friend John was saying, you know, I just want to be left alone. And he was talking about big institutions, big government, always coming at you, never there when you really want them, but always coming at you. And I think we're all feeling the same. Let's take control. Let's get our government back. Let's see if we can get a few people elected that maybe will speak out this election cycle. Again, to get involved in the program today, give us a call at 800-313-9443, and you're listening to Dr. Nick Begich. I'm with you every Wednesday from 11 to 1 on the RBN Radio Network. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And we're here every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Time on the RBN Network, the Republic Broadcasting Network. And we're pleased to be a part of this program and part of the lineup. We always have a lot to say, and I hope that we're keeping people interested in these subjects and stimulating some new ones. I appreciate the callers. You guys always bring in another dimension to the discussion and the debate. I want to give that number again for calling in today and getting involved in this program. Give a call at 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. We're getting up to the getting close to the top of the hour. I want to continue this discussion again, looking around the news today and kind of thinking about what's all been happening and sort of the unraveling. You know, I'm looking at this corruption situation in Washington. You know, that we still haven't heard the full breadth and width of, you know, the Abramoff events are still yet to fully unfold. But I think what they've done is trigger a bunch of other investigations. And, you know, when I was in Santa Fe, there was a big deal going on there, again, centered around corruption and local politics. You know, maybe this is the beginning of a little bit of an avalanche. You know, the whole period, this era that we're in, I've said it before, reminds me so much of the time at the end of the 60s and beginning of the 70s. The beginning of the 70s is when my father was in the United States Congress. I was living back in Washington, D.C., and in the suburbs there in McLean, Virginia. And, you know, the times are kind of repeating. The cycle is back around. You know, the same issues. In those days, there were issues of privacy, liberty, and integrity of government. The problems then were, you know, they were really looking to break back the power of the FBI. You know, right before 9/11, I want to remind people, if you go back to September 11th and then go back to your newspapers for the month of August, starting in the beginning of August, what you'll see is a call by the Congress, the same call that went out in the early 70s, for reform of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, for their lack of confidence in major, major cases. Right after that, we have 9/11. Then in the unfoldment of 9/11, we find out they were even incompetent in what became the biggest drain on American resources in our history. I mean, we were susceptible to a terrorist event that apparently there were plenty of people that knew, both in the FBI, the White House was being briefed, the people that were concerned, the CIA in this case, bringing this issue to Condoleezza Rice and it being ignored. The reality is, here we are, once again, in the same situation we were in the 70s with U.S. Government trampling over the rights of citizens. In fact, back then they were trampling over the rights of congressmen. There were tapping congressional phone lines. All of them were being tapped and monitored. Mail was being intercepted. Community groups around the country were being infiltrated by Central Intelligence and others. This came out in a presidential report in June of 1975 in the aftermath of Watergate, which eventually got us the Freedom of Information Act of 1976, supposedly to make government more transparent. And this administration has sealed more records under classifications where we can't see them than any other administration since, and has failed to declassify materials that are long since dead and old to give us the visibility and transparency that Americans deserve. You know, all of these problems that we're facing happen, usually they start in the back room in some closet where people are plotting and planning things that they wouldn't do in the public, things that they wouldn't do in front of their mother or grandmother, they do in private, and it results in tremendous damage to all of us across the country. The fact of the matter is, transparent government is the only government that you can ever even partially trust. And when I say partially trust, because a population of activists, a population of people involved that keeps the government trustworthy. And that means each of us has to become a little bit more involved in how we see our government shape and what we get out of it. Because right now what we're getting out of it is the wrong thing. We're getting out of it a corporate policy that has enslaved all of us to systems that no longer should. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And I, for some reason, am not picking up that bumper music going into those breaks, so we're getting chopped off a little bit. I apologize for that to listeners. I know they're working on it. They're on the board, so hopefully we'll catch that during this next hour and we won't have that chop-off so abruptly. Let me give you the call-in number again. It's 800-313-9443. You know, in the last few weeks, I want to kind of shift gears a little bit. I've been doing a lot of reading in a couple of different subjects, and I'm communicating with several of my friends around the world, literally around the world, looking at setting up a conference that we're going to do in Dallas at some point. It's going to be a closed meeting of experts to take a look at some of the impacts of technology and develop really an educational strategy on perhaps some of the most complicated and complex issues, many of the issues that we've talked about on this station. But one of the areas, and this is, you know, when I started looking at the aspects of health and the issues surrounding our health, you know, I have a doctorate in traditional and complementary medicines. My area of interest was electrophysiology, the effect of electromagnetic fields on the human body. And, you know, in that research, you know, it led me down a lot of very interesting paths. For those that have known me for a while, Gene Manning and I worked together and actually wrote the book Angels Don't Play This Harp, which was sort of the outgrowth of that interest. Recently, last month, and actually now the month before, in August, we released our newest book, Controlling the Human Mind, which deals with the issues of how the body and mind can be affected by electromagnetic fields. And some of the material that I've been reading lately that I think is extremely interesting is the work of Alexander Kavaranen. And I'm going to spell that name so people can look him up on the Internet, look at his website. The last name is spelled Kavaranen. I'll give that again, Kavaranen. Alexander Kavaranen was one of the was the former head of the biophysics lab for the USSR Academy of Sciences from 1979 to 1989, up until the fall of the former Soviet Union. Today, he's a visiting professor at a dozen Western institutions. He also holds a Finnish citizenship and tends to reside more of his time in Finland these days. But Alex is an interesting guy. He spent 6 weeks with me in the late 1990s in my home here in Alaska. And as a biophysicist, looking at the impact of electromagnetic fields on human health led him in a number of very interesting directions. His most recent paper that I've just looked at is on the physics of extrasensory perceptions. Now, think about this for a moment. This is the physics of what people thought was so mysterious, even still do include today. This paper is being circulated for peer review right now. Hopefully will be published soon. But it's 225 pages of text that break down the text and physics, the mathematics of how these phenomena occur. And I'm talking about those anomalous human potentials, those gifts of the spirit, if you will, if used properly, but analyzing those from the standpoint of physics. And, you know, there's another guy, and I'm talking to Alex on the phone here a week or two ago, in fact, just before I went to Dallas now 2 weeks ago, and we were talking about this whole area, and he said, you know, there's somebody you have to read, Nick, that's somebody that's really got my attention, and it's a guy named William Tiller, T-I-L-L-E-R, and he's published three books in the area of consciousness, and he is a material scientist, a specialist in crystallography, working at Stanford University, was chairman of that department at Stanford for years, left that work when he completed what he felt was the end of that career, and spent the last 30 years in consciousness study. And what he's found is borne out by the physics. That is, in fact, we are mitigated. We're going to the break. I hear that music this time, and we'll be right back. And you're listening to Dr. Nick Begich with Changing the Way We See the World. Welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and we're here every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Time. Let folks know if you're interested in calling in today. The number is 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. Just before the break, I was talking about this writer, William Tiller, who's written three books. One is called The Science and Human Transformation. One is called Conscious Acts of Creation, and the other is Some Science Adventures with Real Magic. And this is interesting, because the word magic is kind of misleading, I think. It brings up all kinds of strange images, at least it does for me. As someone who researches science topics, whenever I see this word, I kind of cringe. But, you know, if we go back, and this is, somebody reminded me of this, is if we go back, say, 500 years, and we were to lift somebody from that period of history into today's modern world, and just coming through our houses and seeing television sets and hearing radio and seeing lights turning on and off and just the normal modern conveniences, we'd probably all be burned at the stake out in the parking lot of our homes because it would seem like magic. And in fact, what it is a lack of understanding. And as we gained in our understanding, these things became a little bit less mysterious. You go back to the time when radio was first invented and people objected to that. When you look at when airplanes were first invented, people objected to that. But the fact of the matter is, the new physics is starting to raise more questions than it's answering. Within quantum physics, this idea that maybe there's more behind creating the reality that we face in terms of what we do and how much we input into that. And what they're finding is that, in fact, the observer, us, actually impacts the reality in a much more dramatic way. And it's actually borne out in most religious teachings. You know, the idea that we're co-creators on some level with God is a fundamental to the belief system of Christian peoples and many others. This is borne out now by the science. You know, when I raised the issue of Alexander Kavarain and now looking at these issues that most scientists won't touch. They won't touch because they're afraid of what it'll do to their reputation. They don't want to touch these subjects that are on the edge. But as I've said in past programs, nothing springs from the status quo. It always comes from the edge of science and from the edge of business, from the edge of religion. It always is those few that see it slightly differently that bring new understandings into human consciousness. Tiller and Kavarain are two of those doing some of the most interesting work I've seen in this particular area. You know, when you talk about the idea of really affecting these anomalous functions of human beings, something that's being studied, something that we write about in Controlling the Human Mind, which is a book we released in August, the idea of actually mapping the brain, looking for those individuals that display these anomalous phenomena, the ability, say, for instance, one of the big issues that comes up is, and we've talked about it before, is telepathy, the idea of knowing what another person is thinking. You know, this is the electronic versions, electronic telepathy is the stuff of Woody Norris, who won the MIT Lemelson Prize last year for inventing a microwave system for transferring sound information, like people are hearing today when they're listening to my voice on the radio and on their computers. They can actually transfer on a microwave that voice directly into the head of an individual where they perceive that proverbial voice in the head. This is what the military refers to today as controlled effects. They're actually replicating by looking at the human brain. They're able to create artificial signals, man-made signals, that override the mind in a way that can give a person all of the senses, taste, touch, smell, auditory information, or even visual images. And when you think about this, you know, affecting us in this way, and much of this works on a subconscious level, you know, there's, I read a statistic just the other day that that we actually, on a subconscious level, are processing about 50 million bits of information per second from those senses. So we have the ability to absorb vast amounts, and from that we screen most of that out as noise, or background information that we're not concerned about, and our conscious mind focuses on only a very, very small amount of data as opposed to how much is available. When you're talking about developing computer analogs and systems that can duplicate what the mind does, this is the stuff of military science today, and it's also the stuff of exceptional knowledge in the mind and the brain and human potentials that are being lost, because these technologies are not being developed as rapidly in the private sector as they are in military planning rooms, basically for controlling or degrading human performance and not enhancing it. And yet there are some independent scientists such as Tiller and Kavaranen and others who are doing phenomenal work on the other side of this fence with the intention of making this information available to the public so that we can understand it, so that we can relate to it, and we can decide whether these are things that we want to see our government dabbling in, or whether they should leave it alone and stay out of it, or at least make sure that it's serving a greater good than debilitating human beings. You know, the idea of mapping the brain and looking for these anomalous capacities and then being able to create synthetic models that can duplicate them is really what a lot of science is about. It's about taking a look at the world around us and trying to figure out how it works and then how to manipulate that world. And if we look around at the constructs that we've created as human beings, we can see it's truly a reflection of who we are and what we are. And when you look at what we've created together around the world, we've got a little bit of work to do. I mean, we've seen some things that many of us at a very base level find highly objectionable in terms of how we've seen so-called development occur. And at the same time, we see a lot of displacement around the world as value systems and belief systems get displaced, not because other good ideas come in, but because people are manipulated, governments are manipulated, and manipulated by corporate interests and other interests that aren't our own and aren't the average person's. And I think that's a big part of the impact of technology today, is to take a look at what are these impacts, how are they affecting us, and what, in fact, can we do? When you're talking about human consciousness itself, I've said this on this program, and I'll say it again, is the only way any of this stuff that we all talk about on all of these programs will ever change is when we, as individual people, recognize the need. In other words, something happens in our head that recognizes the need, and through our conscious effort, we begin to change the way we see the world and the way in which we interact with it. You know, many people have said to me over the years, yeah, but everybody's so apathetic. Nobody cares. They do care. And the fact of the matter is, having an apathetic public is not necessarily an obstacle that can't be overcome. In fact, it works to the advantage of an activist. Anybody who's out there doing activist work knows it's a lot easier to convince 7 or 8% of the people about an issue than it is to create a change in 51% of the people. The fact of the matter is, if 15% of the people vote, You just need 7.5% plus one to make a difference. And people laugh about the plus one. We just saw a legislative race that ran here in Alaska in the primary this last time that was just settled by a coin toss. It was a tie after a recount of paper ballots, things you could really touch, not electronic ballots. It was a tie vote. The coin was tossed and the decision was made. You know, that's an interesting way to settle an election, but it tells us how important every vote is in this election season. You know, we've got a lot of races coming up in every part of the country. Look for those people of character. And if you're, like most parts of the country, you can't find them, look around in your local government. Look around in other places for those people of character and integrity and start finding those individuals and encourage them to seek and hold a public office. You know, we only need a few to start to raise the questions in the many. This is how every revolution in thought has ever began. It began with a handful of people seeing it just a little bit differently, but most importantly, doing something about it. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. You know, it may not be the issues we're covering today, but everyone listening to this program have issues that they would like to see debated, that they would like to see resolved. Write those issues down. Write down those things you can do in a few minutes that'll make a difference, whether it's writing a handwritten letter to your congressman, whether it's a phone call to a neighbor or a letter to the editor, something you can do in furtherance of what you believe to be right and true. There's a lot of empowerment in that. You get a lot of satisfaction. You no longer feel quite so helpless to know that there are millions of others doing the same on any given issue, and that will make a difference. Don't wait for a group to form. You're already standing in it, called the human race, biggest group ever organized. That is the most unorganized group we've ever seen, and yet we see change happening because of the goodwill and good intention of people and applying that to the world around us. Today, to get in on this call and get in on this program, dial 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. You know, going back to this issue of the physics of consciousness, you know, as I started to read this material, and I got through William Tiller's last book this weekend, I've got the two earlier books to read, and it's kind of my habit. I like to read what a guy's written at the end of a chain of writing, basically because a lot of times people get new insights that are worth understanding. And, you know, what I can say is a little bit complicated reading, but when you get right down to it, the very simple message in it is the consciousness, the intention of individuals affects the reality around us, and they've measured this. They've proven this. The physics of it isn't well understood, but the reality of it is what we think and what we do really, really matters. It sets the form and frame for the future, and we are that future. Each of us listening to this program, each of us on this planet can make a difference by our intention being focused on those things we wish to accomplish, and now the physics is proving it out. We're coming up to the break. I hear the music coming in, and we'll be right back. And you're listening to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. Welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and you're listening to RBN Live. You can tune in every Wednesday from 11 till 1 p.m. Central Time, and we're here talking mainly about technologies. And in this hour, we're starting to get into a little bit of this discussion about some of the most recent breakthroughs, I think, in consciousness studies that are really, in my estimation, are the kinds of papers that are just starting to make it in to the mainstream. Now, I've had three separate physicists in the last 3 or 4 months use this word that I really cringe at, magic, in describing this leading edge of physics, where things that were previously unexplained or ignored, often ignored by mainstream scientists, not because the data wasn't there, just because of fear. In fact, Tiller puts three groups of scientists sort of in this lump. The first group are those that, no matter what you present in evidence, are not going to touch the topic because of fear over their careers and what their colleagues might say. The second group are those that are pretty well anchored within their professions, have the credentials to kind of do what they want, if you will. They've gotten the credibility they need that will at least look at the issue, although they won't comment on it. They'll look at the issue and look at it objectively. And then the third group are those that will engage these issues, and they represent a very, very small minority. I don't care whether it's these particular issues or cold fusion or over unity devices or any of these technologies, but when you start to look at these consciousness studies, you start to look at the energy that they're looking at, and you start to look at the equations, and then you read the work of people like Kaveh Raymond that actually tie all these issues together. The most recent paper he's produced deals with over unity devices and cold fusion, and it's a paper that's again available on his website, and I can give that to you. I've got it in my hand now. It's H2O@KAREELIA.RU. Again, H2O@KAREELIA.RU. If you have a physics background, you're going to find his material incredibly intriguing, and I highly recommend it. If you don't have a physics background but know people in that realm that are interested in biophysics, print the documents out that he has there, and he has many PDF files there that are quite compelling and useful. Kaveh Raymond is a brilliant guy. He's doing fantastic work, and fortunately, a lot of this work he's making available to the public through his website. You know, the thing about all of these guys on the edge is they really only have, and this is one of the dilemmas that we've run into, is they really only have a couple places to go, and usually it's to government labs, either in the West or the East. And the problem has come up where these guys who have brilliant, brilliant ideas, some of them actually have a character, the kind of character that says, hey, I'm not interested in sharing this for misuse. I'm interested in developing these bits of knowledge in a way that serves humankind, that frees humankind to a higher set of possibilities, and doesn't follow the existing paradigm of fear and panic. And this is what has, in fact, happened in so much of our areas of human interaction. You know, this whole issue of control and how it's shifted to this kind of fear mindset has a lot to do with the military-industrial academic complex, and the way that that's evolved since the 50s, since the early 50s. And the changes that have taken place as a result of that is a major shift in the way in which public policy is debated. And when we've had a lot of times and opportunities to talk about some of those shifts in public policy driven by corporate interests. It's a topic that comes out all the time. But when you think about those interests today in the United States, the biggest chunk of discretionary money is spent on the military. And so military contractors, those multinationals that deal with military interests and energy interests as major components of the federal budget, do in fact influence the greatest amount of public policy outcomes. It used to be the military was relegated to the closet. You know, we only broke them out when we really needed them. And the civilian sector made the value judgments about when and where that would happen. And it's changed. It's shifted dramatically. You know, I want to talk after the break, because I know we're coming up on a break here pretty quick, about this change in military thinking and how that has affected the country. I also want to encourage listeners to call in today at 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443, if you want to get in on any of this conversation or raise issues that are related to them. You know, the idea that the military can, in fact, push us in directions maybe we wouldn't go. You know, recently we've seen some resignations and some testimony in Congress, resignations and retirements by officers that are expressing deep, deep concern over the direction in which the country is going. I think we need to commend those that are willing to stand up and be heard, even when it's tough to do that. They take the personal risk to do it. These are our heroes. These are the people we need to remember. These are the people we need to reach out to and touch and let them know that we care and we recognize the content of their character. And hopefully we see that content and character spread within our Congress to a little more depth than the few that are there now. You know, we have a lot of things in the coming months that are going to be happening in the country. Right after the elections, And going into the end of the year, I think we're going to see the beginnings of some real change. You know, in the next year, in 2007, that's where the big impacts of all of this start to pile up on us, and we'll see what these midterm elections bring, and whether or not we have the content of character that we need in our Congress. You know, when we brought in a couple of these guys. Hey, welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and I'm pleased to be on the RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network, and I want to encourage listeners again. This is last couple of weeks there's been an attempt and a good response to the pledge drive. Call in, and after the show, let me give you the RBN office number to call in and make a pledge, 800-724-2719. Again, 800-724-2719. Support this network. Support RBN. Let's keep these programs on the air and this network alive and well and spreading. I have Lester, looks like, holding in Ohio. Lester, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You had something you wanted to say or something you wanted to add?
He was talking about the free energy. I started writing down that guy's website, and I got the H2OKER.
Let me give it again, then. It's H2OKARELIA.
On KER. What
no,
is it?
KAR.
Wait a minute, come on.
EL.
I've lost you. It's H2OKER.
H2O at KAR.
E-A.
That's the problem with these Russian names. It's KARELIA.RU. You got it, Lester?
No, I don't have it.
This show is archived, so go back into it after the program. It'll be on there. We're on the second hour at the lower part of the half hour.
Okay,
and, that'll be there.
But on the subject, did you hear where California? There's a guy, I watched a movie a guy made about this here, at any rate, he took and made a movie about this free energy, right? And
right.
It's on the internet, and I also heard that the state of California is bringing a lawsuit against 6 automakers for pollution. Because,
right.
Well, this guy out in California, he's driving a free energy automobile.
Right.
And
right.
You know, it doesn't take fuel, doesn't it? You know, he doesn't have to put nothing in it.
You know, this is an area that periodically has shown up over the years. A lot of times we hear about, there's a book called Suppressed Inventions, which actually talks about how these things have been suppressed. There is an outfit, actually, that is just making a lot of waves around the world in Ireland, and I'm trying to remember. I think it's Scorn is the deal, but I could have that wrong. But in checking out their site, they're claiming an over-unity device, and they got so much flack because nobody wants to evaluate it. And those that have evaluated it from the scientific community say, yeah, really works, but we're not putting our name on it because they're afraid of ridicule. They actually took out an ad in one of the most prestigious magazines in the world, The Economist, where they allowed scientists to apply online as evaluators. And from the hundreds of applications, they selected 12 that are evaluating this science now. I think within the next 12 months, we're going to see some major, major breakthroughs in this area. And I've said on this network and others, part of what I see the oil industry doing, when you think about the run-up of oil prices, they have accumulated the largest amount of cash, of hard currency cash for investment of any time in our history, more than most governments have in readily available cash. And yet, what are they going to do with it? They're going to invest, and you're starting to hear the propaganda primarily from BP about how they're investing in green technologies. They're going to invest in these alternatives because they want to maintain the monopoly on energy. They have no interest in freeing us. It goes back to Tesla's first free energy technology over 100 years ago, when J.P. Morgan found out that the energy was going to be nearly free, the whole project was shut down. Those projects are being resurrected. Those concepts are resurrected, and we are going to see the results of those. The guys in California are doing some interesting work, and I've heard about that. Others in the former Soviet Union, in Japan, in Europe, and around the world are making major, major breakthroughs in this area. And in the next 12 months, you're going to see them come out, because instead of waiting around for peer review, the smart operators are developing applied technologies, things you can put your hands on and touch and feel, that are actually working models that demonstrate these capabilities. That's where the interest and the excitement is going to build over the next year or so, because it's past the point of no return and to the point where the suppression is no longer going to be possible.
Okay, I got a couple more quick things to throw in here.
You bet.
Did you hear the news today about GM?
I didn't catch that, no.
GM took and threw out, they threw out the deal with Toyota and whoever it was that they were supposed to take and join up with. They totally took and turned their backs and walked away from it. Well, GM's stocks crashed because of it, but you know, hey, at least GM's sticking up there being American. You know,
we've seen what's happened with the other major automakers. We've got big problems in that sector.
Well, and a couple of days ago, I was trying to tell people, they were asking, well, what can we do about this? What can we do about this? And I suggested that we take this information to our grand jury. Well, I tried doing that today. Well, I did get my name taken down, and I did get thrown out of the court by the new marshals. The county sheriff used to take and be over the, you know, doing all that. Well, we got special marshals now.
If you got thrown out of a courthouse, I've been thrown out of better places than that these days. And I'll tell you what, keep trying, because it's in the effort that matters. We've got to make the attempts that we think we can make, and at least make the effort and try. And I urge people to try and use these systems as much as we can. Rattle their cages at the local level where we can make a difference. You know, if the sheriff isn't doing it the way that you want it done, the local judges aren't doing it the way you want it done,
the sheriff,
campaign against these guys and replace them. Get some people in there that you can have some confidence in, that have the character that the country needs right now.
The sheriff thinks I'm stupid, you know.
Well, you know, the whole thing is, when people are uninformed on issues, you know, that's their first reaction is, I've never heard about it, as if they heard everything that ever was uttered on the planet. Persistence pays off. Put your documents together in a good way. Maybe you'll never change that guy's mind, but you know, look for the next one in line. There's always someone.
I got thrown out of another place today. It's called Grounds for Thought. It's a coffee shop.
And
a lot of people, I did run into a group of teachers there. I gave them a bunch of DVDs, and I gave some kids, tables outside on the front, on the street. I gave a couple kids their DVDs. I got DVDs that I did in digital format. I probably got 20 movies or so. I haven't even counted them all that I got stuffed on a DVD in digital, in data format. You can put all kinds of stuff on there. You know what I'm saying?
You bet. You bet.
And,
Lester, I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate you trying, because, you know, all around the country, these are the kind of efforts we can do. You know, the things within our power, the things that we're capable of. And I say to people all the time, do what you know you can do successfully. You know, Lester's able to duplicate material and information and get it directly handed off to people that might look and listen. And those young people that he saw and those educators that he saw, if just one of them, can see the light, can look past the status quo, can look past the fog of propaganda that surrounds us every day in every way, those might be the very individuals that do what you, Lester, or what I, Nick Begich, can't ever do. And I think it's incumbent on us to keep passing the information on, give people that opportunity to at least see it and hear it. One of these days, someone will act on it, and you may never even know that you are the one responsible really for planting that seed. The seeds that get planted today are the ones that get harvested in the future. Don't underestimate what we can do when we do it with good intention and with the right heart. You know, when we look at the country, it's easy to succumb to fear. It's easy to look at the world around us and start to shake with panic. But with within each of us is a great, incredible power. It's our birthright. It's our right to interact. It's what when we look back at last week's program and talking about Jefferson, is what the founding fathers understood, is what Thomas Jefferson understood when he wanted to make sure that the power of government was vested in the individual souls, the individual people that comprise a country, and that it not be reserved to the elite. You know, before the last break, I was talking about this shift in military and government, and it went from the military to the military-industrial complex to the military-academic complex. And now what you see is the muzzling of the academics across the country because of institutions afraid to lose the military government grants to feed the biggest amounts of grants flowing in to these institutions or federal monies, and they don't want to say a word, not a word, that would jeopardize that. And too many good scientists are muzzled or forced into working for governmental institutions that do not serve our interests but serve the interests of the few and the elite and the wealthy and the mighty and those that would wage war against us through their politics and through their economies. And that's the thing that we need to grab a hold of, is to remember where we all come from, what the force of our power is when we unite together in a constructive, not a destructive way, to change the course of the country. And we do it by individual actions and by individual sovereignty and the protection of individual liberties and freedoms, the things that are fundamental to the very form of government that allows us to even have this conversation today on a radio network scattered across the country and scattered across the world. It's time to wake up to our own potentials and begin to exercise them in all of the small and large ways. And there are really no small ways. To get in on the program today, it's 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. You know, in the last few months as we've done this program and talked about a lot of these issues, we tend to revolve around many of the same themes. But they all center on really one underlying issue when it comes to government, and it's the issue of transparency. It's a word that I've heard used in Europe for the 12 years that I've been involved in this particular work and traveling back and forth from the European side. You know, the subtitle of my latest book is called Technologies of Political Control. It's the subtitle of Controlling the Human Mind. And that phrase, the technologies of political control, was developed by European parliamentarians when they began to evaluate some of the emerging technologies of the 21st century and their impact on people. And their belief and their conviction was that it would result in a highly directed and controlled society, the kind of society we're seeing emerge in this country, a society of control and manipulation based on a platform of fear, anger, and hatred. This is fundamentally flawed and violates the very character of the country and the very character of most of the people within it. The fact of the matter is, transparency in government is what is now required. We need to be able to look in and see what our government is doing. And in looking in and recognizing what evil rests there needs to be stripped away, uncovered, and laid bare and exposed and changed. And in this election cycle, we should be insisting on high values, moral people winning those elections. And there are moral people in both parties. These are people who through the content of their character and their living experience, not their words, but their actions, they're rising and falling out of difficult circumstances and maintaining their integrity and character through all of those difficult circumstances. That's what makes a person capable of serving in the future. You know, when I look back on the days when my dad was in the Senate and was in the U.S. Congress, things were not much different then, but there was at least a sense that we could still make a difference. You know, here in my part of the world, we have a small population in a huge area. My brother Mark is mayor of Anchorage. He and I disagree on lots of political issues, but the one and the fundamental things that we agree on, the idea of being able to have this kind of discussion, the idea of being able to have lively debate, is what matters and needs to be protected within the country. The debate on technology is long overdue, and the debate on the impacts of our technologies is long overdue. Hopefully, this show will shed some light in areas where there has only been confusion, darkness, and manipulation. Transparency in government, transparency in the technological directions that we're headed, is what is required to build a strong political context for the 21st century. You know, this program and RBN Live has provided great opportunities to get these issues out. Support this network. We're still in the fund drive and the pledge drive. If you can pledge $10, $20 a month, do it. That's what keeps these programs on the air. It's not a lot to ask. If you can handle that, please do it. And call right after the program. Call 800-724-2719. Again, 800-724-2719. Every week I give 2 hours to this network. I'm not paid for this time. We have the opportunity to talk about these issues. That's what's important. I pledge my time and my resources to do this, and I ask you to do that, to join with me in supporting this network in whatever ways that you can. If you can't pledge, then let your friends know about this network. Spread the word. That's just as powerful and just as important. It reminds me of the story of the widow's mite. You know, the most strong thing was the thing they could do, not the thing you can't do. Do what you can do for this network, for your community, and for your friends. You know, RBN Live has provided a forum for many, many of us to take these issues forward, and more importantly, a forum to you to be heard and listened to. Give us a call today to get in on this program and to talk to us about your issues at 800-313-9443. And you're listening to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. You know, all of the stuff that we've covered, I think, is the kind of thing that we need to focus on, we need to pay attention to. In the coming months, I'm going to try and get some of the folks that I've mentioned. I'm going to try and get a way, and I think I can get him through an Internet connection. We can get Alexander Kaverain, and perhaps we can get him on the air to talk a little bit about what he's doing. Other researchers I know around the world who are doing some fantastic work are plugged into those Internet communication networks that will allow them to plug into this program. And we're going to try and get them on. They're on a little different time cycle. They're on the other side of the world. So from where I am, they're 10 or 11 hours difference. But we'll see what we can put together, even if we have to record the program, because these are important people with important ideas that belong in our consciousness as we try to develop a more transparent view of technology, a more transparent view of our government, and perhaps the kinds of changes that are needed in order to really change the world. And those changes always start with each of us acting in what we believe to be right and true and acting on it. In a small way, any way is the right way. We need to just take this first step that really changes the things around us. Remember the story of the widow's mite, and don't underestimate what an individual might be able to do in changing the way we see the world. You want to get in on the program today? Again, I want to remind listeners the number is 800-313-9443. And I want to give background also on my website. You can see my bio on the RBN Live site. On our website, earthpulse.com, I encourage people to go there. I forget often to mention my own website, but it's earthpulse, earthpulse.com. And I also want to say that the research used in this program is provided by the Lay Institute on Technology, a Dallas nonprofit. And you can look at the Lay Institute site at layinstitute.org. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And we're on every Wednesday from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Central Time. Spread the word. Let others know. I have one more caller hanging in there, Greg in Michigan. Greg, are you still in there with me?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I sure can. You had a comment or question you wanted to raise today?
Well, I'm holding first, let me tell you quickly about myself. I'm kind of a bad guy, in the respect that I've been listening to RBN for a very, very, very long time, and I've neglected to really participate, and I plan on changing that. I'm going to turn that around, and I apologize for that. Thank you for that.
And if there's a time and a place for everything, and I'm glad you've arrived at that place. I know they'll appreciate it as well.
Well, I love RBN. It's just got to be one of my favorite places to visit and listen in, and the shows that I've discovered on RBN Live are just very valuable, very valuable. There's no doubt about it. Anyway, I'm holding my book here. It's called It's kind of a blue book. It says, Angels Don't Play This Harp. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a...
Right. I co-authored that with Gene Manning years ago.
I bought this a while ago, too, and I've had it, and I've read it cover to cover, and it's a very good book. I've tried to, you know, get other people to read this as well. And just, I guess, you know, at this point, I just really don't know what to say other than, you know, thanks. I appreciate your website also. I appreciate your book very much and all the research that went into it. And I've been playing the game quite a bit. I know you know William Cooper and probably his Behold a Pale Horse. He was a submarine sailor.
Right, right.
And I'm a retired Navy, by the way. I'm also a submariner. They call us bubbleheads. I was on four nuke subs, an old World War II diesel boat. And I know there's probably some listeners that heard of my name out there because I put websites out there. I make little things, you know, but, I'm trying the best I can. I'm, you know, to fight. I'm on your side and I believe in the direction we're going. And, I'm wanting to, do what you're doing. You know, get on board.
Well, Greg, I'm proud to count you as one of the patriots in this country. You know, it's the little things that you do that matter. And people keep thinking, you know, that you have to do something big and best. You don't. You do what you have in front of you, and it really does add up. And the idea that, you know, that we can have these kind of conversations, the idea that these programs are also archived, so they don't just go away, but people can go back and refer to them and use the material. That's what it's all about. I mean, things change by the actions of many, and those actions really do add up. They're not missed. They create. And the physics, this is what's so interesting. The material I was referring to, the physics actually says that when we place our intention and then we follow it up with action in terms of what we think and then what we do, it actually does, in fact, push the envelope even further than we physically realize. The physics is showing that on an unseen level, it begins to set up the circumstances by which things can change. Our intention matters, our will matters, our free will matters, which bears out the truth that we hear within the Christian faith as well as many other religions that specify that the will is the powerful thing. What we think and what we do really does matter. Greg, I thank you for the call, and I thank you for the encouragement for both myself and our listeners. You know, these are the things that make the difference in the 21st century. These are the things that will one day set us free as we pursue our truth and we make sure that truth is heard. On this network, it's all about the truth. The Republic Broadcasting Network. Support the network. Call in after the program at 800-724-2719. And you've been listening to Dr. Nick Begich with Changing the Way We See the World. I want to encourage people again to tell their friends, tune in, and we'll be back next Wednesday. I'm going to try and get a guest lined up on some of these topics and bring a little more dimension to the debate in changing the way we see the world.